Okay, this is lecture number 6 in ethics. We're going to deal with biomedical issues. Medical science has gotten to the point, you know, modern technology has advanced to where now we've got a whole mess of questions, ethical questions that have sprouted up that we've never had to deal with before. And so we're going to try to look at some of those. Let me go to the board. We're going to take a look at the different views between the secular humanist type thinker, the thinkers that either believe there is no God or they believe maybe God exists, but he's irrelevant. And we look at the secular humanist perspective and contrast it with the Christian view. And with the secular humanist, and the Christian view over here, with the secular humanist, there's no God or no creator. And of course, with the Christian view, there is a God. Also, the New Agers, because their God is an impersonal God, he's an it. He's a God that is not either good or evil, but either a combination of both, or good and evil are just illusions. For all practical purposes, the New Ager would side with the secular humanist. Man is an animal, the secular humanist. With the Christian, man was created in God's image. With the secular humanist, there is nothing higher than man in the universe, so man is sovereign. Man is and sits enthroned. Man is in charge. With the Christian view, though, God is sovereign. See, in other words, the debate really isn't in the doesn't really focus on the issues themselves. The debate focuses on your view of God and your view of man. Every once in a while, you get somebody who's not consistent with his views, and you'll have a Christian who thinks like a secular humanist or a secular humanist who thinks like a Christian. But if they're consistent with their views, we can see some vast differences here. With a secular humanist, it's the quality of life is the issue. But the guy's born without arms and legs. What kind of quality of life is he going to have? Let's put him out of his misery. That's the quality of life. With the Christian view, it's the sanctity or the holiness of human life, the sacredness of human life to be created in God's image. So one is determining, is the quality of life high enough to where we should keep this person alive? That's the secular humanist view. The Christian view, all life is sacred. Like our friend Father said, all men were created equal. Not equal in man's eyes, but equal in God's eyes, because we were all created in God's image. And with the secular humanist, it's the end. The end justifies the means. Now, you'll hear them left and right denying this. But when you look at President Clinton when he took office and how he ended up using the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, it was pretty much the end was justifying the means. I mean, it was a Gestapo-type action that was taken there. And granted, Koresh was not a good guy. Koresh should have been dealt with, but he should have been dealt with alone. And there was no need to kill all those innocent little children. And the way it was done, but it was like, hey, we want to get Koresh, we're going to get Koresh, even if it means killing innocent children too. And so it was handled in a horrible fashion, and there was a lot of lying going on about how it occurred. But it's like a lot of people haven't. Once you say there's no absolute right and wrong, which is usually the standard secular humanist position, and then you come up with some goal that you think is a good goal, even though you've really just defined good out of existence, then however you accomplish that goal is irrelevant, because there's no such thing as right and wrong. But with the Christian, it's not the end justifies the means, but it's God's moral law that tells us what is right and what is wrong. And so you can see right there there's going to be a difference of opinion in a lot of, not just the abortion, euthanasia, but also in biomedical issues as well. The secular humanist position is that humans are responsible for the quality of life. Humans are responsible for the quality of life. And the question says, well, who decides? Who decides whether the quality of someone's life does not meet the standard and therefore we need to remove them from the master race? Who decides? The humanists say that individuals have sovereignty over their own lives. Individuals have sovereignty over their own lives. You know, as a police officer, I talked to maybe three or four people during 10 years. I talked to maybe three or four people out of killing themselves. Now, with these pro-choice people in the area of abortion, and then people saying that individuals have sovereignty over their own lives, maybe in their opinion, maybe what I was doing was wrong. Rush Limbaugh, whether you like him or not, on his program, he showed an interview of somebody on a suicide hotline when the guy, lead singer from Nirvana, Cobain or whatever his name is, killed himself. He showed an interview with a lady, one of the ladies on his hotline, and the lady said, "We're not here to eliminate choices. Suicide is a choice. But what we're here to do is to propose other possible choices that the person might choose. But in the end, the choice will be that." In other words, what she's basically saying is, we counsel from a perspective, there's no such thing as right and wrong. That's your life. You're not property of God. And if you want to kill yourself, you've got that freedom to do it. Now, what kind of advice is that for someone? Right? You know how Rush usually laughs when he says, show something? He wasn't laughing when he came back. Because that's the kind of advice they're going to give to 16, 17-year-old kids who are hurt. Yeah,
that comes from one of the great thinkers of our time, Carl Rogers. That's his plant-centered therapy of counseling.
Yeah.
There's original right and wrong, plant besides.
Yeah. Carl Rogers' best-selling book was entitled, "I'm Okay, You're Okay." And so you could be sit down across the table from Al Capone saying, "Oh, hey, I'm okay, you're okay, and now I'm going to help you with your problems and get you on the right track." But the humanist position, individuals have sovereignty over their own lives, but the biblical position is that God is sovereign over life. Remember Job 1:21, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away." The Lord gave life, only the Lord has the right to take life. In Genesis 9:6, where God invests that authority to take life to man to execute the premeditated murderer. The humanist position, they won't admit it, most of them, but basically what they're saying is it is man's duty to create a superior race. The humanist position boils down to man's duty to create a superior race. That's that Beyond Freedom and Dignity by B.F. Skinner. That's all he's talking about, is let's get beyond freedom and dignity and let's genetically engineer the superior race that we need to bring. This was the kind of stuff that we condemned Hitler for. And now we condemn him at Nuremberg and his followers at Nuremberg. Then we turn around, we're doing the same thing later on.
They're doing that secular humanist, the white supremacist, and the Church of Satan. They're all three saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Didn't this start with Nietzsche?
I did.
What's that?
Didn't this start with Nietzsche?
Nietzsche had a lot of... It didn't really start with Nietzsche. You could trace it back to Alexander the Great and the Greeks. He was sitting at the feet of Aristotle, And Aristotle basically taught there's two kinds of people in the world. There's the Greeks and there's the barbarians. And the Greeks should take over the world and make the barbarians, all the non-Greeks, be their slaves and do all their work for them so they can sit around and talk philosophy and politics all day long. Alexander the Great was only a teenager. He said, hey, that sounds great to me. And by the time he was 25, he conquered the world. Then with nothing left to do, he, through a bunch of drunken orgies, he killed himself, parted himself to death at the age of 33. But Nietzsche, when he brings this up later on in his writings, he died in 1900, the year 1900, but in his writings, he was a German philosopher. He goes back to the Greeks and said, that's the kind of thing we need. And what he said was, he said, God is dead. In other words, we invented God. God didn't create us in his image. We created God in our image by our own wishful thinking and our own imagination. Then we philosophically grew up, realized that God didn't really exist. So now religion is dead. God is dead. But he said, my fellow atheists, we've got to be consistent here. If God is dead, all traditional values have died with him. If the God of the Bible doesn't exist, then neither does the absolute moral law given in the Bible. And so what he said was, we need a breed of supermen or overmen who need to have the courage to create their own values. And Nietzsche even recommended hard values rather than the soft values of the Christians. Now obviously Adolf Hitler thought this guy, when he read his writings, said, this guy is thinking right along the same lines as me. Now Nietzsche himself did not like the Nazis because they were anti-Semitic. He thought that was wrong. But once you throw traditional values out the window, Nietzsche has no right to say that you can't be prejudiced against somebody just because of their nationality. I think the Nazis were more consistent with Nietzsche's teachings than Nietzsche was himself. But the thing, Nietzsche thought that modern man had come of age. Nietzsche thought that, yes, we finally figured out that God doesn't exist, but in the next century, which is our century, 20th century, he said, we're going to actually start living in accordance with that belief. And so he predicted there would be the most horrible wars ever and the bloodiest century that mankind has ever seen. And he was right. But I think he was the most consistent atheist who ever lived. He spent his last few years in an insane asylum, and then they let him spend his last year with his sister, living with his sister until he died. Humanist position, it's our duty to create a superior race through genetic engineering. The Christian position, the Christian critique is superior race, who decides? Maybe Adolf Hitler should decide? What about Joseph Stalin? Maybe he should decide. You know, we always think that, well, they were wrong because it wasn't a good guy in charge. But now, you know, Bill Clinton or B.F. Skinner or Watson or Crick, they're good guys. So it's okay for them. Once they get in that position, they'll make good decisions. James Madison hit the nail on that. I think it was a quote from Lord Acton. Said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. No man should have that much power. The only man who should have that kind of power is a perfect man, and there's only one perfect man that I know of. And when he returns, he will have absolute power. But until then, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. The humanist position, again, the end justifies the means. But the critique of that is that the end does not justify the means. Both the end and the means must be justified because it is God who declares what is right and what is wrong. Remember Micah 6:8, he has shown you, O man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you. And so the end, both the end, your goal, that's got to be just. And then the means to accomplish that goal has to be just as well. Mm.
But, what's that?
Yeah, I made sure I got that on tape there, John. Because I know your sick mind would appreciate something like that.
The Christian perspective is one of serving God, not serving man. So there's going to be a lot of differences. Jim Geisler has a... And by the way, a lot of these things that I'm bringing up are just charts that Geisler has in his book. The two views contrasted again. The Christian view is one of serving God. The humanist view is one of playing God. Okay? With the Christian view, it's voluntary treatment. With the humanist view, it's compulsory treatment. You know, whether a person likes it or not. With the Christian view, it's improving human life. The humanist view is, hey, let's create human life. And they want to clone humans and all that kind of stuff. The Christian view says we should repair human life. The humanist view, playing God, wants to recreate human life. It's the old Frankenstein monster type thing. The Christian view is the maintenance of life. The humanist view is the engineering of life. Do some genetic engineering and make the kind of robots we want. The Christian view is genetic fitness. You know, we might be able to correct chromosomal imbalances and heal people of Down syndrome when they're born and stuff like that someday. So it's genetic. It's one of genetic fitness. But the humanist view, again, playing God, is genetic fabrication. Hey, let's see if we can further the evolutionary stage to the next degree. And so they start messing around and they come up with some poor guy who's a product of their messing with God's creation. Christian view is cooperation with nature. The humanist view, again, playing God, is control over nature. The Christian view is conformity to nature. And the humanist view, again, playing God, is power over nature.
So what are we supposed to think of the gene research that's being done now, these magic bullet viruses that go in and... Well, the goal is that they will be able to erase Down syndrome from an unborn baby, erase diseases.
That would be... I didn't see that as genetic fitness. I would see that as... But again, too, how are they experimenting on it, too? Because the end doesn't justify the means. And if they, let's say, if they're experimenting on aborted babies to try to enhance the knowledge in that area, that would be wrong. But to correct abnormal, you know, it would be like a baby born with, or it'd be like you break your leg and they reset it, and you know you're just helping. There's an abnormality in your body, and they're just helping it to get back to normal. And I wouldn't see a problem with that, depending on that, as long as they took the right measures to go along there. But the problem is, you give these guys an inch and they take a foot.
So as soon as they were to convert that technology to treatment over to determining whether or not you were going to have a boy or a girl by biomedical means, or determining whether or not your child was going to have five fingers or six.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then there's ways of, I can't remember exactly the case anyway, but yeah, there's even the possibility of them genetically engineering and turning males into females in the womb,
right,
and stuff like that. And that's going way beyond anything that would be justified. Some of the fallacies that are exposed here in biomedical research is the idea that what is being done ought to be done. What is being done ought to be done. Just because something is doesn't equal that it ought. Okay? Is doesn't equal ought. Okay? To say Adolf Hitler killed 6 million Jews doesn't mean that Adolf Hitler ought to have killed 6 million Jews. So is does not equal ought. Another fallacy that needs to be exposed: if it can be done, it should be done. Well, you know, we can steal candy from a baby, I could beat up probably 85% of the people that argue with me. You know, just because you can do it doesn't mean you ought to do it. The end justifies the means. Another fallacy. You know, it'd be like stealing a baby to solve infertility. Raping someone to solve loneliness. You know, the end does not justify the means. Another fallacy, two wrongs make a right. You know, that's the case of the experimenting with aborted babies. And then they say, don't you see all the lives we could save by experimenting with these aborted babies? Well, two wrongs don't make a right. You don't kill babies before they're born, that's one wrong. And you don't experiment on human beings that have just been murdered. And two wrongs don't make a right. The Christian principles that we need to bring into play here are God's sovereignty. God's sovereignty, God is in control. We do not own ourselves. The 1 Corinthians 6:19. 1 Corinthians 6:19. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you are not your own? You are property of God. He's the giver. He gave you life, and He can take it, but you don't have the right. Your life is not yours to take. God's sovereignty. We do not own ourselves. Another Christian principle is human dignity. Therefore, we should respect human life. The sanctity of life is another Christian principle. We were created in God's image. The mortality of life. We can't avoid death. We've got to recognize that God's appointed it's for man to die once and then comes the judgment. Hebrews 9:27. Psalm 90 verse 10. Also speaks on this, that God has appointed a certain amount of time for a lifespan, and you know, you're going to die someday, so you know, we don't need to go to extremes like freezing yourself right at the point of death, and maybe 300 years later they'll have the technology and they can bring you back. And Psalm 90 verse 10, as for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years. Yet their pride is but labor and sorrow, for soon it is gone and we fly away. Real optimistic verse, but you know, but we can't avoid death, and though we should try to save lives, we should recognize that eventually we're all going to die. So all this, like, you know, a lot of this genetic engineering, a lot of this stuff is hoping to somehow come up with a way that we're going to have find a cure for death. Okay? Well, I know the cure for death. His name is Jesus. But anything apart from that, you're not going to find something in the lab that's going to cure death. And then charity towards human life, loving your neighbor. Mark 12, 30 and 31, love God with everything you got and love your neighbor as yourself. Some Christian guidelines that Geisler brings up. Yeah, let me remind you of this thing. Geisler's textbook, except for his one on Christian apologetics, the textbooks that I use of his are probably the only courses where I actually teach the textbook, but I think he does such a good job that I just stick with his textbook, except in areas where I disagree with him, and then I'll bring up the differences. Some Christian guidelines. There should be voluntary procedures. You should not force cures on others. Say, all right, you finally got a guy who needs that artificial heart or this or that. Now we can try out the new X147 artificial heart and just right off the assembly line, and we'll use this guy as our guinea pig. And the guy says, no, I don't want it. He should not force cures on others. Like abortion, in China they force abortion. If a woman's had one child already, she's put in the back of a truck and taken where they force an abortion on her. They also force sterilization on certain ladies. That's been done before as well. So the Christian guidelines would be voluntary procedures. Another Christian guideline would be to mercifully allow death. Now, that doesn't mean the same as mercy kill. But you allow death and you're merciful when that is the case. Another Christian guideline would be to preserve life, but that doesn't mean you necessarily have to prolong death. Never remove natural means of sustaining life, such as food, water, or air, regardless of a person's age or health. Never remove natural means of sustaining life, such as food, water, or air, regardless of a person's age or health. That was like that lady that was, she was what, 90-something years old? She had been in a coma for 7 years. And, you know, all the taxpayers' money was going into this and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. They put a price tag on human life. So finally they brought one of the world's foremost experts testified. It was in America somewhere. And he testified that, yeah, there's no chance she's going to come out of this coma. She's going to die. She had no lethal disease. She wasn't dying. She was just in a coma. And since we were able to feed her intravenously, she really wasn't dying. But he said she'll never come out of this coma. She'll be in there forever, virtually, and until her death. And she's not even dying now, so her quality of life is so low, might as well pull the plug. So the judge ruled there. Seems reasonable to me. Now, that court decision was like on a Friday, and because of some kind of red tape, they couldn't do it till Monday. She had been in a coma for 7 years. I read a big article on it in the paper a few years ago. And so they got to wait till Monday. They got the court order saying, thumbs up, go ahead and do it, pull the plug. Well, she comes out of the coma that Saturday, the very next day. And she's been in a coma for 7 years. She's 90 years old. So then they question the guy. So obviously, he's supposed to be one of the world's foremost experts. He's not going to say, I made a mistake. He said, all I could figure it was probably a miracle. That's the only time doctors will admit a miracle. That a miracle is the second to last thing that a medical expert will admit. The last thing is that he made a mistake. So they'll always admit the miracle right before the mistake. But never remove natural means of sustaining life, such as food, water, or air, regardless of a person's age or health. You know, it's like those things, values clarification they used to teach you in the public schools, they probably still do, where they ask kids questions, multiple choice questions, like, you're in a life raft, and it's beginning to sink because there's too many people in there. Who would you throw off first? The little baby, the 85-year-old guy, the guy who's married, young guy who's strong, he's married, he's got a wife and three kids, or your Democratic congressman from that's a giveaway there. But they're trying to get people to decide the quality of life. Get kids to decide the quality of life, and then they'll grow up saying, well, his life isn't worth as much as his, and this guy deserves to die. And it's a form of brainwashing. Another Christian guideline would be birth control, but not abortion. I would agree with Geisler that I had one Christian brother tell me that if you really believe that life starts at conception, you should be against birth control. Because you believe the sperm is living? I said, yeah, the sperm is living, but it's not a living human being. You know where they argue that the embryo is a part of the woman's body? No, it isn't. It's got its own separate genetic code. But the sperm itself, you could argue, is part of the man's body. The egg is part of the woman's body. But once the egg and the sperm join together, at the moment of conception, then you have a whole new genetic code. You have a whole new human being. So life starts at conception. So therefore, birth control, certain forms of birth control, by the way, are equivalent to abortion. Because they stop the pregnancy not from occurring, but after it has occurred, after conception, then they destroy the fertilized egg. But if it's birth control that prevents the egg from being fertilized, then there would be nothing wrong with that. There's no human being that was killed. And then another Christian guideline would be to correct human life. Don't try to create it. Correct human life, but don't try to create it. Just work with the healing processes in man and try to find a way to correct something that's wrong due to the fall of mankind. At the same time, you don't try to create it. Now let's talk about some of these biomedical issues. Organ transplants. Here's a pretty obvious point that Geisler makes. Should be voluntarily donated. I'd like to add something there too. Should be voluntarily donated and then taken from the guy after death. I think that'd be it.
Harder they did among the ones who donated.
What's that? Oh, that's right too. That's right too. Because you could give up your kidney. I wouldn't do it, but of course, a lot of times they do that. They do it for one of their own kids.
Exactly.
That's right. So, okay, yeah. Good point. Good point, John. You
probably get a monkey different sense.
You move your C up to a B.
Probably get a monkey different sense.
What? If you scratch it.
Oh, you're talking about that? No, we're talking about humans. Monkey, well, of course, you're probably going to want to get consent if you're a new ager. Anyway, but organ transplants should be voluntarily donated, and they shouldn't hasten death to get a fresh organ. There's all kinds of things where a guy's on a machine, death is imminent, can die in the next 5 minutes to the next week, and there's been times when they wanted to try to get the okay to pull plugs and rush the death of this guy so that they can rush that organ out to this other guy who needs it right away. You don't kill Harry to save Lenny. Genetic surgery should be done to repair life as God meant it to be, not to reconstruct the type of people we want. Suppose we find out that there's some genetic thing that makes people more likely to become Christians. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to correct that genetic abnormality. But genetic surgery should be done to repair life as God meant it to be, not to reconstruct the type of people we want. That's what B.F. Skinner would want. He would want to reconstruct his own master race.
Homosexuals trying to isolate that gene that makes you that way. So.
And then there's also, Adolf Hitler was trying to, they were experimenting on Jews, and doing all kinds of things to try to give them blonde hair and blue eyes. And so a lot of horrendous things there. Sex detection and selection. It's wrong to abort a child of an unwanted sex. Suppose a couple wanted a little girl, and they found out that there's a little boy in the womb, so they said, okay, well, we're going to abort because we wanted a girl, and we'll just keep aborting until we get that girl, or vice versa. In China, if the daughter is born, They usually kill the daughter. Many of the parents, not I shouldn't say usually, but many of the parents kill the daughter and wait till they get a boy because it carries on the name and takes care of the adults when they're old. I don't know exactly what the
girls are a financial burden too. You know, you have to pay the dowry to get them married off.
Artificial insemination. This is a tough one, but you can see some justification for it. To artificially inseminate a woman with the sperm of her husband, I wouldn't see any problem with that. Geisler says by a donor is debatable. I just think it's wrong. I mean, you can adopt, and I think adoption would be best, and I don't think you need to be putting even artificially the sperm of some stranger in the to artificially inseminate a woman by the husband. I wouldn't see a problem with that. Surrogate motherhood, pretty much a womb for hire is what Geisler calls it, and I've heard others use that terminology. It's very tough for a woman, very difficult for a woman to give up a child that she's had for 9 months in her womb, and adoption is usually better. You usually end up with World War III and the mother of all custody disputes that come out of that. Just somebody, I've seen too many of those surrogate motherhood that just have just torn apart lives more than anything else. And I think, again, adoption is better. You know, we're aborting 1.5 million babies per year, last I heard, and there's 1.6 people that try to adopt and get turned away each year. So you just change a few of the rules there, and things would be a lot better. Organ and tissue harvesting. Organ transplants from aborted babies, obviously that's wrong. It should be voluntary. Geiser does put an after death there, but as John pointed out, there are some times where an organ transplant could be done while the person is alive, so your kid needs a kidney, and you might want to donate one of your kidneys and stuff like that. Let's see. But this organ and tissue harvesting, it's got to be voluntarily, voluntary, you know, you can do such a devaluing of human life that, you know, you could just, you know how your car needs a part and you go to a junkyard and you just pick it out? If we don't do something real quick, that's the way it's going to be with morgues. You just, if somebody needs a part, you're just going to go to the morgue and they're going to just, you know, yeah.
Aren't you telling me that in China they're harvesting food for that purpose, selling organs? Somebody told me that.
I think I've heard of it, but I don't think I heard enough of it to tell anybody. So I think somebody else probably told you, but I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it at all.
What technology say they can keep organs alive for longer periods of time than ever before? So if someone, like for instance me, I've got a medical. On the back of my driver's license, on an organ donor. So when I ever get cracked on the highway or something, any organs that are salvageable, they can keep alive in some hospital for I don't know how long time period, so it's longer now than once before.
Mm-hmm. I've heard they science. There's some that are even advocating the fact of cloning technology to keep just like a
big
body for
right.
that purpose.
Yeah, growing. Clone. Get your own clone, a clone or two. So that if you need a heart, you got an extra one. If you got that's some crazy stuff. Cryonics, which is deep freezing human bodies at death in hopes of finding a cure. Probably shouldn't be doing that. It just seems to be an attempt to avoid death, you know. And God's given us a lot of time, and death is inevitable. Death is going to come. Cloning, carbon copying human beings from a single cell. Again, this is wrong. We're playing God. God only knows what would come. We've already cloned frogs, and I don't know what the outcome would be of a situation like that.
It would kind of have that body that
you
cloned.
Yeah, and there's certain types of twins. Which, I could possibly see a clone might end up becoming like a twin, but a separate entity. But even there, if it's done at a certain stage, but even there, we're playing God and we're getting into a situation. That's what God said at the Tower of Babel. Now nothing will be impossible for them. And boom, he intervenes. And we're right back at that point again, where now it's like anything we set out to do, it looks like we're able to accomplish. And we're cloning frogs and then talking about cloning humans. I think the next intervention of God is right around the corner, and that appears to be the second coming of Christ to planet Earth. Gene splicing, producing new kinds of life by splicing the genes of one organism into another, that's wrong. It's an effort to redesign nature. And then frozen embryos. Remember, we quoted from Jerome Lejeune, who died recently, by the way. Jerome Lejeune, the guy who discovered Down syndrome, the genetic expert who said that human life starts at the moment of conception. He testified, when he said that, he was testifying about frozen embryos a wife and her divorced husband were arguing about custody of these all these frozen embryos that they had. Remember, life starts at conception, so these frozen embryos are tiny human beings, and that's exactly what Jerome Lejeune was saying. Yeah.
Doesn't Pauline overlook individual development and spiritual development?
Well, the thing with cloning, I think the reason why I don't want to talk too much about it is I'm really not sure exactly what occurs. If all that occurs, if it's done at a certain stage, and all that it occurs is it artificially makes a step which makes twins, but a real legitimate twin.
When they're cloning frogs, they do it in an embryonic stage. They can't do it any other way. They've got all the genetic material and the DNA, but how it actually comes together and interacts, when you've got that many million, that much genetic code, they've got the raw material, but they don't know how to put it together. For some reason, at the embryonic stage, the embryo knows how it all fits together. That's the only way that they can clone frogs, okay? And it's feasibly the only way that they could ever clone human beings.
Mm-hmm. But they're not artificially creating twins. They're taking
adult
frogs and making another baby out of it.
Yeah, but it has to occur at that very beginning of life.
But isn't that the beginning? There's two different kinds of twins. I know one type of twin. What's the type of twin that there's just an extra splitting?
That's maternal.
And
through a half split becomes two separate embryos.
Yeah. And is it possible to clone at that stage that would bring about the same effect?
No. What's happening is you're erasing whatever would have been the baby and replacing it with the donated genetic material.
Are you talking the maternal or cloning?
Cloning
wouldn't erase the original.
Yes, because you have to have the embryo start from, and then you give it new genetic material to grow with. So you're erasing the baby that would have been and replacing it with donated material.
So then to do it at that stage, they wouldn't be able to have the real you and the clone.
Take an embryo from some woman, put my genetic code into it, and that is what would develop.
Instead of the child
that would have been.
So a genetic replicator.
So there wouldn't be two.
No.
Okay.
You're killing basically the first.
Okay.
The donor embryo.
Okay, then just the frozen embryos, life starts at conception. They are tiny human beings. Conclusion, Christianity does not hold back scientific progress. It sets the moral boundaries for it. That's important. It doesn't hold back scientific progress. It sets the moral boundaries for it. Christianity does not lack compassion for those who suffer. It merely recognizes the sanctity of human life. Okay, that's all for that lecture there.
Pastor Phil?
Yeah.